Hey, Clay, if there was a summer camp for critical thinking, we'd be the chief counselors.
Those jellyheads in June would be intellectual warriors by August.
Be a lot of fun, too. Some Bill and Ted's Excellent Adventure references thrown in.
This podcast, like a daily dose of that, minus the campfires, archery, and pranking the girls.
The bona fide boot camp for critical thinking. You can get in on it for free at the iHeartRadio app or wherever you get your podcasts. Just search our names, Clay and Buck, listen and subscribe.
In the fall of 1986, Ronald Reagan found himself at the center of a massive scandal that looked like it might bring down his presidency. It became known as the Iran-Contra affair.
The things that happened were so bizarre and insane, I can't begin to tell you.
Please do.
To hear the whole story, listen to Fiasco, Iran-Contra on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
On the Jordan Harbinger Show, you'll hear amazing stories from people that have lived them, from spies to CEOs, even an undercover agent who infiltrated the Gambino crime family. You're about to hear a preview of the Jordan Harbinger Show with Jack Garcia, who did just that.
My career was 24 out of 26 years was solely dedicated working undercover. Now I walk in, I'm in the bar. Now there's a barmaid there, good-looking young lady. She's serving me a drink. Yeah, what would you like? I usually, my drink was, give me a Kettle One martini, three olives, glass of water on the side. I finish the drink. The guys come in. I'm going to go in my pocket, take out the big wad of money. Bam, I give her $100. If you're with the mob, I say, hey, Jordan, you're on record with us. That means we protect you. Nobody could shake you down. We could shake you down, but you're on record with us.
For more on how Jack became so trusted in the highest levels of the Gambino organization, check out episode 392 of The Jordan Harbinger Show.
Your holster is way more important than you think it is. It's just way more important than you think it is. What, look, and I get that. The holster's not the sexy part of carrying firearms, right? You want to talk about your weapon and your ammunition. You want to talk about your safety training. You want to talk about how you did at the range. Oh, look at my groups. I was doing these farrier drills today. And all that stuff's really important. I mean, really, really important. I'm not discounting that. But I've known so many people who do all those things. They take all the necessary steps, and then they carry with a holster they bought from a big box hunting store that was made 1,000 at a time. Please, don't put your life in one of those holsters. You need to trust Northwest Retention Systems because it's all custom-made gear. It's the only thing I carry around. NWRetention.com. That's NWRetention.com. Use the promo code Jesse. Gets you 10% off.
What's going on, everybody? We got a great show for you tonight. We're going to talk about the left's obsession with racism, talk to somebody who is actually doing something about critical race theory in our schools, and we are going to talk about whether the media is going to continue to give Joe Biden a pass further into this administration. And we're going to talk about exactly what the new Supreme Court Obamacare ruling has to do with conservatives. So it's going to be a great show. Join us up next. Hello. I am not moderately talented community college graduate Jesse Kelly, but I am Rob Smith, contributor to The First, senior contributor to Turning Point USA, and host of the Rob Smith is Problematic podcast. In case you didn't realize it, I'm black, which according to the left means that I'm too stupid to get a photo ID to vote, think Kamala Harris is the greatest politician to walk the face of the earth, a female Jesus, really, and spend the majority of my time living in fear of white supremacy. When Joe Biden wakes up from his nap to not take questions from reporters and instead give a canned speech to a friendly crowd, he says things like this.
We can't. We must not give hate a safe harbor. As I said in my address to the joint session of Congress, according to the intelligence community, terrorism from white supremacy is the most lethal threat to the homeland today. Not ISIS, not Al-Qaeda, white supremacists.
And what is this white supremacy that the left speaks of? What does it look like? What are the effects? Well, I don't know, but what I do know is that those they accuse of it constantly, all the time, seem to have one thing in common. They don't vote for Democrats. In fact, not only do they not vote for Democrats, they seem to be actively voting and advocating for Republicans, more specifically one Republican and the values he's popularized on the right. Of course, I'm talking about Marco Rubio. Just joking, nobody talks about Marco Rubio. No, I'm talking about Donald Trump, the orange man, orange Hitler, Mango Mussolini, the worst of humanity, as are his supporters. How bad are they? Well, they're the white supremacists. They're the racists. 75 million of those voters would want nothing more than to, in Joe Biden's words, put a black man like me back in chains. Hell, maybe when they found out I'm gay, they'd make the chains rainbow. It seems like the left can talk of nothing else but racism. Take a listen.
Well, if you think you're not racist, you could be right, but in this day and age, that's simply not good enough.
What I did wrong in 2016 is I overestimated white people.
The biggest terror threat in this country is white men, most of them radicalized to the right.
Those white guys, those middle-aged, boring, nerdy-looking white guys.
And white people have been probably woefully late to this conversation.
But I'm not willing to let white voters off the hook.
It's critical for white people, for people in general, to stop denying their racist ideas.
It's all racism all the time on the left, because if they stop talking about racism or white supremacy for a single second, they may actually be forced to talk about the things that matter in the real lives of the vast majority of Americans of all colors. The things that the Biden administration is getting wrong on every front. Things like rampant immigration, which is making all our grocery bills go up. Things like what printing out trillions of dollars is going to do to our economy once the monopoly money runs out. Things like the crisis on the border, which, by the way, is a far bigger threat to working class African Americans than white supremacy will ever be. And back to that pesky white supremacy. Do you remember how we didn't really hear anything about that particular boogeyman during the Obama years? And then, all of a sudden, it was all anyone on the left talked about the second they lost an election. The left has spoken of it nonstop since November of 2016 because the leaders in charge have realized a deeply cynical truth. Their political power comes not from a strong, united, and yes, diverse America. Their political power comes from a deeply divided and tribal America, sliced and diced into smaller and smaller groups that the left hopes it can cobble together just enough angry little victims united in their shared oppression and misery to give the left enough power to pass the H.R. 1, quote-unquote, for the people voting act. A blatant political power play by Democrats to nationalize and control elections so that they don't have to worry about winning them anymore. Sometimes, they even say the quiet part out loud, which is exactly what the left's resident Mensa member, Representative Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez, did on one of their propaganda networks.
Mistake. And especially if Senate Democrats are not going to pass reforms on H.R. 1, we cannot rely solely on a wish of winning elections.
If you're familiar with Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez, like so many millions of Americans now unfortunately are, you will realize that she, along with the rest of her minions and the so-called squad, speak of race, racism, and identity incessantly, almost pathologically. It's used as a weapon to silence their opposition, to make us all think twice about being bold enough to speak of their incompetence. In the case of her fellow squad member Ilhan Omar, her status as one of the few Muslim members in Congress is used to let her get away with saying things that would get any Republican member of Congress censured and undoubtedly stripped of committee assignments. Various anti-Semitic tropes, and more recently comparing the United States of America, the country she took an oath to serve in Congress, to the Taliban, masterminds behind the most lethal terrorist attack on American soil in history. But what does this all mean? What is it all about? From wokeism to white supremacy, from critical race theory to 100 genders, from kindergartners being taught BLM at the same time they're learning their ABCs, what is the point of all this? And while we're at it, Saturday is Juneteenth, a now federally recognized holiday that celebrates the end of slavery in America. Conservatives are right now taking the bait from the left, as they always do, and being reflexively anti-Juneteenth, as they're arguing that it's as divisive as the critical race theory we seem to spend so much time talking about, and that we'll get to later in the show. The only problem is this. Juneteenth is an actual moment in American history, one that, by the way, has absolutely zero to do with the divisive rhetoric of critical race theory, which seeks to further divide Americans into either oppressors or victims. Reflexively anti-CRT conservatives are once again falling into the left's trap, being against a moment in history that is important for all Americans, just so that the left can paint conservatives as anti-black. In fact, none other than Mr. America First himself, Donald Trump, made it a campaign promise to make Juneteenth a federal holiday. So conservatives, please, listen to your boy Rob Smith and resist the efforts of the left to conflate critical race theory with actual African American history. Because by being against Juneteenth, we leave them the opening to do exactly that. To make it seem like conservatives do not care about Black Americans. To make it seem as if conservatives are reflexively against anything that the majority of Black Americans are for. And I say all this to say, to continue to fight against critical race theory, fight it with all of your might, but use the Juneteenth holiday as an opportunity to celebrate one of America's greatest moral victories, ending slavery. Coming together to celebrate moments like this is truly what makes America great. But even outside of Juneteenth and the efforts of the left to conflate celebration of Black history with critical race theory, what is the point of all this? Well, it's quite simple. The left wants nothing more than wholesale government control over our entire existence. It wants cradle-to-grave government control of all citizens that the demagogues in charge right now will use to grow governments and line their pockets. Just ask Nancy Pelosi why she's worth upwards of $150 million after decades being spent serving in Congress. And this left that wants government control so bad will exploit the weak-minded, feeble identitarians who gain their cancel culture currency via social media and their power over the weak classical liberals who won't dare stand up to them via the alleged oppression they experience every second of every single day, allegedly, as a result of their race or color or ethnicity or sexual orientation or gender identity or weight or immigration status or any of the other intersectional identities that they use to bludgeon the rest of us with decency, morals, and common sense into submission. Speaking of morals, it's now something called Pride Month. And about these pride parades and the whole LGBTQIAK++ alphabet soup Pride Month nightmare that we all have to endure every June, I'm going to say this. The movement for gay and lesbian rights is, I think, one of the most important ones to happen in the past 30 years or so. And I am personally proud to be creating the space for more sane gays and lesbians who identify as conservative. We originally wanted the same things all other Americans wanted: the right to marry, be treated equally, to have the opportunity to build the American dream. But the LGBTQIAK++ alphabet soup movement has descended into full-blown leftist chaos, leaving many gays and lesbians out in the cold. Those on the left are terrified to criticize any of the insanity we see day in, day out, and those of us on the right are cast out for wrongthink. I, for one, am done with the LGBTQ alphabet soup mafia. The movement has fallen. It's fallen to leftism, it's fallen to tribalism, and it's fallen to groupthink. Ignore them at all costs, but don't think that your freedom-loving gay and lesbian brothers and sisters want anything to do with that crowd. But something is happening, folks, and not a moment too soon. People are waking up. Over the past 4 years, a coalition of hardworking, bold, and smart America First conservatives, independents, libertarians, and yeah, even some liberals has been built. And they are rising up against the tyranny of the wokeistanis currently terrorizing us with Ibram X. Kendi children's books and cartoon drag queens teaching preschoolers about pride parades. It's true. If you tune out of whatever tongue bath is being given to Biden over on CNN and MSNBC and tune into the fight happening in the real world, you'll see it every day. parents of all races fed up that their children are being taught to define themselves and their classmates solely by skin color in grade school. Employees of big tech companies blowing the whistle on the ways in which Facebook, Twitter, and YouTube collude to control the flow of information into society. Information that, especially when it comes to COVID-19, we now know could have saved countless lives. Fed up journalists tired of feeding viewers Democratic Party propaganda and turning against their cable news overlords. And finally, right here, people like me. People that have common sense. People with so-called identities that should be completely owned by the left, but instead are standing up against it. Because we all know that where this is heading ain't good. They're black, white, Latino, Asian, gay, straight, whatever. And they know that they don't have to be owned by the left. They don't have to hate America. And they have common sense, which the left has totally lost. Even President Obama is recognizing it.
You would think, with all the public policy debates that are taking place right now, that, you know, the Republican Party would be engaged in a significant debate about how are we going to deal with the economy, and what are we going to do about climate change, and what are we going to do about, lo and behold, the single most important issue to them apparently right now is critical race theory. Who knew that was the threat to our republic?
You see that right there? That is fear. Fear of a united America first, GOP, libertarians, independents fighting back against all of that stuff, trying to bring back common sense. So here's to those with common sense. Here's to those who know a strong border means a strong country. Here's to those who resist being defined by immutable characteristics like race or gender, and instead define themselves first and foremost as Americans. Because let me tell you something. We're going to need all of those people we can get if we're going to make it through the next 3.5 years of a Biden-Harris administration. Ryan Gardusky knows a thing or two about critical race theory, as he has formed a pact to fight against it. He joins us next to talk about it.
You know, your house smells. Don't get mad. Don't get mad. My house smells too. I'm not indicting you. I'm sure you keep a clean home, but just time means you're going to acquire smells, whether those are cooking smells that get in your paint and your carpet. Maybe they're animal smells. Maybe you're a smoker or someone else was. Just living creates smells. I didn't realize that my home had a smell to it until I got my first Eden Pure Thunderstorm, the greatest air purifier I've ever owned in my life. This thing, I had it plugged in for 2 hours. I came back in the room and my air smelled so clean. I now own 3 of them. I'm not making that up. This thing has absolutely changed me, on top of what it's done for my allergies. Go get one. Get 2. Be like me and get 3. Go to EdenPureDeals.com. Make sure you use the promo code Jesse. That gets you $10 off and free shipping. EdenPureDeals.com, promo code Jesse. Newton Group Transfer. They are here to help you if you're stuck in a timeshare. These stories from people who have these timeshares and can't get out of them, they're shocking. These timeshare companies, not all of them, but so many, they get their hooks into you and you can't give them up. You can't give them up. Or they'll do things like they charge you thousands of dollars. One girl, she got past her timeshare when her mother passed away. She gets past the timeshare, doesn't want the timeshare, doesn't use the timeshare. They tell her she can get out of it for $4,000. She has to come up with a $4,000 check. This is not right. It's unjust. And Newton Group Transfers is here to help you. If you are in a timeshare and want out or know someone who is, call 888-845-3773. That's 888-84-JESSE, or go to timesharejesse.com, Newton Group Transfer. They will help you out.
It's hard for me as a reporter because I don't want to put foils in a bad light, right? Freedom of information laws are wonderful things, but it is, in fact, a tactic of national and just hyper and fast-growing local organizations to use onerous public records requests. So what we'll see, what we saw in Maine, is asking for all of these records requests of, you know, how much money did you spend on anything involving race? And then that is used to sort of frame, again, the school board as being, as paying for CRT.
Interesting. Chris Hayes and low-level NBC reporters don't think parents should have any kind of say in what their kids are learning. In fact, it's a right-wing talking point that kids are being taught to hate one another based on the color of their skin in elementary school. Right. Well, my next guest tweeted about this clip, but he's not just talking about it. He's doing something about critical race theory. Welcome to my friend Ryan Gradusky, founder of the 1776 Project PAC and author of They're Not Listening, How the Elites Created the National Populist Revolution. Thanks for joining me, Ryan.
Thanks for having me, Rob.
Absolutely. Okay, Ryan, first of all, I want to hear about your PAC, why you founded it, and what exactly it's seeking to do in this combating of critical race theory in our schools.
So the 1776 Project PAC is the first nationwide super PAC that is solely for school board elections. And what my PAC intends to do is support candidates across the country who oppose critical race theory and the teaching of critical race theory in public schools who are running for school board. And we will support them. I think there's 10 major states that have elections this year that we hope to play in. And in the last 3 weeks since launching the PAC, we've raised over $130,000 from over 1,600 donors. So people are excited about it, and I'm hoping that it really makes a difference for this upcoming election cycle.
That's great, and it's even more exciting that a lot of that stuff is coming from small donors. That's really great. And you know, it's really funny that this is about, not funny, but it is a great thing that this is for school boards, because we see as conservatives a lot, you know, conservatives are not running for school board elections and city council and all that stuff, and that's where a lot of this stuff starts. So I wanted to ask you, so in your opinion, because I talked a little bit about critical race theory in terms of Juneteenth and all that other stuff earlier in the monologue, so what is the difference to you between critical race theory and just regular Black history that's being taught in school? So what's the fundamental difference between those two?
So kids should absolutely learn about things like America's history of slavery. They should learn about Martin Luther King Jr. They should learn about the Civil Rights Act and Jim Crow laws. It's part of American history. And there are good parts of Black history in American history, and there are bad parts, and they should all be taught. Kids should learn about history through, you know, through how it was experienced. And the overarching narrative of American history should be that we are a great country and we weren't always making the best decisions, but in the end, we've always strived to be better and better and better. Mm-hmm. Critical race theory tries to restructure education to reteach the relationship between race and power. They teach that Black Americans or non-white Americans as a whole undergo racism on a daily basis. And the structures and the institutions created in this country to make it great were created with the sole purpose of keeping non-whites down. And whites, whether they be wealthy or not wealthy, working class whites, all benefit either psychically or economically from racism. And they all have the and so just the only way to actually end racism is to sit there and to break down our institutions, from capitalism to our constitution to our judiciary to the way we run courts in this country, our immigration laws. It's all solely about race, that any inequality or inequity in our society is solely because of race, and it is intended to make inequality happen.
That is the best explanation of the difference between critical race theory and teaching African American history that I have ever heard, by the way. So that was fantastic. And thank you so much for breaking that down, because a lot of people right now, and I talked about this earlier in the show, the left is sort of trying to conflate critical race theory and African American history. And I think people as conservative leaning people, libertarians, people that are against critical race theory should be able to explain the difference between that and African American history at the drop of a dime, just like you did. So well done, sir. I want to ask you about this recent poll. So there's a recent poll that asked if people had a favorable or unfavorable opinion of critical race theory. 86% of Democrats said favorable, 91% of Republicans said unfavorable, 76% of independents said unfavorable. Why do you think that so many Democrats, 86%, have a favorable view and opinion of critical race theory?
Well, around 2012, 2011, 2013, you saw a noticeable uptick in racial words being used by mainstream media, words like whiteness, words like institutional racism, microaggression, all those kinds of terminology came into our cultural index about like 10 years ago.
Yeah.
And that has really changed the way that Democrats view race. And they view every subject through the eyes specifically of race, even when it doesn't actually, when white concerned than Black Americans are about certain issues. And what you can see from the media, what they're doing right now, is they have a four-prong approach to critical race theory. They're saying it's not important, or it doesn't exist, or it exists, but it's not a huge concern, or it will stop the teaching of Black history altogether. None of those are actually true, because they were actually afraid to sit there and deal with this head on, because this is their way of sitting there and brainwashing children to hate this country. Mm-hmm. That's the game.
Yeah, and you know, I was at a dinner for Turning Point USA about a week and a half ago. Candace Owens was the featured speaker, and she talked a lot about this, and she really broke it down in a way that I had not heard it broken down before. The left needs to start indoctrinating these kids as early as possible, right? They teach them this stuff in kindergarten, then it goes to middle school, then it goes to high school, and of course, we all know that they've been indoctrinated in colleges and universities for the past 40 years, and so then it turns us into angry little victims that are, of course, voting for Democrats. Well, Ryan Gardusky, my friend, founder of the 1776 Project PAC and author of They're Not Listening, How the Elites Created the National Populist Revolution, thank you for so much for joining us and being so eloquent and knowledgeable about this topic.
Thank you, Rob.
Next up, we've got Bobby Barak in for a discussion on how the media is covering for Biden and how corporations are woke virtue signaling.
I'll take your questions, and as usual, folks, they gave me a list of the people I'm going to call on. So, Jonathan, Associated Press.
And if you think there's a reason why he has a pre-approved list of people to call on, this is what happens when he goes off script.
Why are you so confident he'll change his behavior, Mr. President?
Yeah, I'm not confident he'll change behavior. What the hell, what do you do all the time?
So
when did I say I was confident?
You said in the next 6 months
you'd
be able to determine.
What I said was, let's get it straight. I said what will change their behavior is that the rest of the world reacts to them and it diminishes their standing in the world.
So how does that account to a constructive meeting as President Putin?
If you don't understand that, you're in your own business.
Just an angry old man. All right. Look, I want to bring in Bobby Barak, politics and sports writer at Outkick.com. So, Bobby, look. I want to ask you a question. I want to get, first of all, before I go into the questions, what is just your reaction to Biden snapping at the CNN reporter?
Rob, first of all, thanks for having me. You know what that reminds me of? When you're in like seventh grade and you prepared all night to cheat for a science test, and the answers on your cheat sheet are different than the answers the teacher gave you for the test. Like, because when you're cheating on a test, you got to follow that script line for line. And if the questions the teacher puts on the test are different than the study guide, you're lost. You're going to fail. That's exactly what Biden did here when he had a different reporter call on him. I believe that was CNN's Caitlin Collins. He was just lost, Rob, not being able to stick to his script. He just knows he's going to fail. By the way, what is he so mad about? Because she asked a question? Isn't that his job to answer questions? This guy acted like he asked some offensive, or she asked some rude, offensive question. Mm-hmm. She asked a question that the media hacks that were asking questions before her should have asked Biden off the top. I mean, as a country, we deserve an answer for that one. And I don't think we're going to get it, Rob, because I'm pretty sure Caitlin Collins' boss at CNN are probably going to say, hey, next time, take it easy on Biden. Don't be so harsh.
Yeah, probably. You know, don't be so harsh to our guy. And you know why Biden's probably so mad is because he was on his way to a nap And she ruined it. She made him late for his nap. That was what was going on there. And it's really funny. So we see this situation with him snapping at Caitlin Collins over at CNN. You know, we see the flashcards that he has. We see the list of pre-approved reporters. Remember, in the first press conference that he did, that he had to get pressured into doing, he had a literal Facebook. He had a book with the faces of the reporters that he was able to call on. You know, look, it's all a joke. But I want to ask you another question. So do you think that this clip, and, you know, this sparked a lot of the sort of blue check, you know, journalist Twitterati outrage. They said, well, he shouldn't, you know, be talking to a reporter like this, because remember, you know, this is supposed to be the good guy now. We're going to help you out. Right. So do you think that this indicates that the tongue bath from the media for Biden is going to be over, or was this just a blip? Do you think that they're just going to go back to covering for him full time?
Oh, yeah. I mean, they're absolutely going to cover for him, because here's the interesting thing, Rob. Biden's cognitive decline is so apparent now, but it's media and Democrats that tell us we can't talk about that. But what's so fascinating, and what a lot of people are forgetting, they're the ones that started this during the primaries. Yes. When they thought Kamala Harris, Pete Buttigieg, Elizabeth Warren still had a shot to beat him. They're the ones that initiated this conversation. So they're going to stick with Biden as long as it's advantageous for them too. I mean, if for some reason Biden says, you know, I'm not going to run in 2024, which he shouldn't, and he turns it over to Kamala Harris, then I think the media might come back and say, hey, that old guy was kind of rude. He wasn't a very good president. You know, what he did, the pipeline, taxes, this guy's kind of a disaster. But they're going to stick with them as long as it's beneficial to them, stick with them. I mean, all you have to do is look back to how they covered him at the first debate when Kamala Harris and him went at it. They all took Kamala Harris aside. Now those same media pundits are saying, okay, this guy is the savior because, well, he's not Donald Trump.
Yeah, absolutely. And, you know, even speaking of Donald Trump, so back when Donald Trump was president, there was all sorts of speculating about his mental faculties, cognitive, like all of that other stuff. So that was an open and honest conversation that we were allowed to have. But, you know, honestly, when you said that stuff about Joe Biden, I was actually kind of taken aback. I was like, are we allowed to talk about this? So now it's like really openly talking about the fact that this is a man in his late 70s, Joe Biden, and even having this conversation is sort of verboten, which I think is very strange. So good for you for bringing that up. And I think that's a real conversation that we should be allowed to have, because we should not let the left dictate conversations that we are allowed to have. So good on that. So I wanted to ask you a question about a new piece you got out here. It's called At ESPN, Fear Gives Talents Leverage. And I know that you were talking, we're talking a lot about wokeism. I talked about it in my monologue earlier this show, how wokeism is just taking over all of media, most of media, which you and I are both a part of. But I want you to talk about that piece for me a little bit and just explain to me what exactly is going on at ESPN with the whole wokeism.
Yeah, so in short, ESPN is hemorrhaging viewers for several reasons. One, cable or cord cutting, people switching to streaming, people interest in sports is down. And also, just as you said, they've stuck a middle finger at half the country. So the half the country is okay, we're out. So in that process, their obvious result is they need to slash salaries. So people that were making maybe $1.2 million a year hosting SportsCenter might be down to $500,000. Mm-hmm. But the problem is that they're afraid to do that to certain people, and you got them up there on the screen, Bomani Jones, because Rob, if they cut Bomani Jones and, you know, woke loser Stan Verrett, who's on there now, they're going to instantly go to the New York Times, Katie Nolan, and say, they cut me, they suspended me, they let me go because they're racist. They let me go because I called Donald Trump a white supremacist. But vice versa, Trey Wingo, they have no problem letting him go because what's he going to say? Oh, they got rid of me because I said Brett Favre was better than Aaron Rodgers. Yeah. That narrative doesn't fear by them. I mean, I've talked to sources all the time, and they say the biggest thing, Bobby, is that these executives don't want a disgruntled former employee to go on record and say, oh, I was treated bad because of my race, my gender, my beliefs. So fear gives them leverage now. 5 years ago, an ESPN talent had leverage if they had an offer from NBC, CBS, or Fox. Now they have leverage if ESPN is afraid of the narrative they can spin upon being let go.
You know, that is such a very interesting perspective, because we can see it now. We can see it now with everything that goes on. You know, somebody, one of their black or female or both anchors gets fired, they run to the New York Times, and then all of a sudden ESPN is racist. So that's a really bold perspective, and good for you. You got a lot of bold perspectives. I need to start reading more of your stuff. This is good stuff. Okay, so last question, and I want to go to this. So there is a new commercial from Indeed that is encouraging people to use preferred pronouns. I want you to look at this.
Hi. Hi, I'm Taylor. Hi, I'm here for my interview.
I'm Dorian, and I use the pronouns he, him. Are you comfortable sharing how you would like to be addressed?
Thank you for asking. I use they, them pronouns.
Great. Well, I'd love to hear more about your skill set.
Okay, look, so before I get your reaction to this, I want to give mine, because this is the first time that I've ever seen this. And as I said in the monologue, everybody knows I'm a gay guy. I just don't identify with the far left, LGBTQIA, all of this other stuff. When I see that commercial, it makes me actually feel bad for these people, because it's not about getting a job, and it's not about what you have to bring to the table professionally. This is all about identities and pronouns and all of this other stuff. And I think that it turns, you know, look, LGBT, whatever, it turns these people into these victims and identitarians who see the entire world through the lens of whatever their identity is. So that's just my two cents. I had to get that out. What do you think, Bobby?
Well, what you just said to me, I think is powerful, because what you told me is, okay, you're a gay man, but you're Rob Smith. You want to be known as Rob Smith. You don't want to be known as a gay man. And that this whole pronoun debate, I believe that's what it is. They say it's a service to the LGBTQIA plus, whatever you want to call them, whatever is a group or whatever. But they're really denigrating those people down to just that identity. They don't want to be looked at as people. They're looked at by their sexual orientation. And Rob, that's a disservice to them, because they're not benefiting from that. They're being told they're not an individual. So I'm just so happy you said that, because what that says to me, some people say, oh, well, that might be bold. All you're saying, Rob, is you want to be known as Rob Smith. You want to be known as the person you are and for the things you say. And I've said this entire social justice movement is about minimizing people down to their race and gender combination. And this goes back to that ESPN conversation. Rob, I believe that those people at ESPN have strategically told their bosses, look at me as a black woman, as a black guy, mm-hmm. as an Asian man. Mm-hmm. Don't look at me for who I am on air. And I can't think of anything more dangerous than being judged by those qualities and not who you are. I mean, to me, that was supposed to be the entire direction we were supposed to move away from, and now we're moving back into it so aggressively. And I think it's so problematic and dangerous for everybody involved.
Yes, that movement is not progressive, it is regressive. Bobby 100%. Barak, politics and sports writer at OutKick.com, thank you so much for joining me, and you've got a big new fan here, man. It's good stuff, man.
Rob, thanks for having me. By the way, Jesse gets a new show, I'm assuming a new raise, works only 4 days a week.
I mean, what do you know?
Where are you at, man?
Execs, we're listening. You know, I think we got a new fill-in. All right. Thanks a lot, man.
I'm in.
The Supreme Court says Obamacare is here to stay. And we've got former Congresswoman and Independent Women's Forum board member Nan Hayworth coming up next.
You don't have to dip forever. You know that, right? You don't have to smoke forever. And the reason I say it like that is I have been that guy. I've been that guy. I dipped for so long. And what would happen is I would decide I'm going to quit. It's bad for me. I'm going to quit. I'm a man. I don't need any help. I'm just going to quit cold turkey. And I would fail time and time and time again. I tried things like the patch. That didn't work. Gum, sunflower seeds. I tried it all. It's just a matter of finding the right thing to help you quit. That's Jake's Mint Chew. Go, put in your dip. Just make sure it's Jake's Mint Chew. It's tobacco-free, it's nicotine-free, it's even sugar-free. And I highly recommend, just a personal choice, I highly recommend their CBD pouches, because it really helps take that extra edge off. Get a jakesmintchew.com. That's jakesmintchew.com. Make sure you use the promo code Jesse at checkout. When you do that, you get 10% off.
Chuck Schumer announcing that Obamacare is here to stay, and now they're going to try to make it bigger.
And once again today, the United States Supreme Court, in a 7-2 ruling, upheld the Affordable Care Act in the face of another legal challenge. So let me say definitively, the Affordable Care Act has won. The Supreme Court has just ruled the ACA is here to stay. And now we're going to try to make it bigger and better.
Now, joining us to talk about this ruling and talk about what it means to conservatives, I'm going to bring in Independent Women's Forum board member and former New York Congresswoman Nan Heyworth. Thanks for joining us, Nan.
Thank you, Rob. Great to be with you.
No, it's great, great to meet you virtually. So, Nan, I want you to break this down for me a little bit. I want you to help me and the viewers understand this a little bit. I'm going to be honest. A lot of people don't quite understand why conservatives are so against Obamacare. And I want you to give me the perspective on why it's such a disaster and then what this Supreme Court ruling means.
Sure. Well, Rob, I'm fortunate in having a perspective as a physician who also practiced for 16 years. And so I've experienced a lot of the, with my patients, a lot of the challenges of America's health insurance system, which is not efficient or effective in all too many ways. And that was true before Obamacare. But the problem for all of us is that Obamacare has not made things better. Obamacare has made insurance more expensive instead of less. It's piled on requirements for people like you, let's say, Rob. If you don't have kids and you're a young person, you still have to pay in your Obamacare premiums for pediatric dentistry. If you're not someone who's going to be having a baby, you have to pay for maternity care.
So all what you're saying to me, so I want to just jump in. So what you're saying is that, so the left is always talking about, you know, we're going to be here for broke millennials, we're going to be here for young people, but Obamacare, which is their signature thing, is actually making healthcare more expensive for young people.
Much more expensive. There is a way to make it less expensive, but Obamacare isn't that way. The way to make insurance less expensive is to do what folks like John Goodman, and I urge everyone to check out what the Independent Women's Forum, the Goodman Institute for Public Policy Research, Heritage Foundation, all of us work together on ideas to make healthcare more affordable. But basically, the way you do it is by giving people more control over their own dollars and more choice. Obamacare made health savings accounts, and those are dollars that you can put away, Rob, and you can then use on insurance plans the way you think you should spend them. They made health savings accounts harder to get, harder to fund. Why? There's really no good reason other than that Obamacare was a gigantic gift to, frankly, to big insurers, to big health systems, to big hospital entities.
Now, that makes a lot of sense. And what I want to do, I want to play devil's advocate a little bit more, because you know I used to be a liberal, right? I want to play devil's advocate for you here, and I want to ask you, why do you think that conservatives haven't really taken up the mantle about this healthcare conversation, right? Because we had in 2016, you know, we had the Senate, the House, and the presidency. Why did we not take the mantle up then?
Right. Rob, it's such a great question. It's always harder, I think. It's always a bit more challenging for us on the conservative side. But when I say that, I actually think of us as the liberals. We're the freedom-oriented people.
Yes.
But when, and you know, Rob, having been on that side of the aisle at one point, it's so appealing intuitively to say, you know, the government's going to take care of you.
Oh, absolutely.
So for us who say, but gosh, you know what? The government can say no to you even more powerfully than it can say yes. So a government that has control over your health care will almost assuredly not do the things for you that you think it will. And if you want proof of that, look at the Veterans Administration.
Absolutely. I wanted to jump in because I talked a little bit about in the monologue earlier in the show about this sort of cradle to grave government control that the left wants. And so, look, I'm subbing for Jesse Kelly. He's a veteran. I'm a veteran as well. I don't know if some of the viewers know that, but I have a lot of experience with the VA. And I was talking with Congressman Dan Crenshaw on his podcast. He doesn't like to bash the VA too much, so I won't go into VA bashing because there's a lot of people who deeply care about veterans. But ask any veteran who knows about the VA healthcare, they will know exactly what government overreach to the healthcare system look like. Okay, so segueing from the healthcare conversation, I want to ask you, how important is taking back the House in 2022 to conservatives, to America, to this whole movement that you and I are both trying to build?
Well, Rob, it would be an enormous help to us to take back the House in 2022. And I think we're very close to doing that. And there's hope for us in this way. Even though the presidential election didn't go our way, we know that there were a lot of victories downstream, including gains in Congress for the Republicans that a lot of folks said were not going to happen. And crucially, gains in state legislatures where redistricting will be likelier to be a net benefit for Republicans in this 2022 cycle than for Democrats.
Absolutely.
We only need a few seats.
We do. And look, I'm telling you, it's going to be a crazy year, but I think that it's an opportunity to take back the House. And I do believe that it's going to be an opportunity to go back to America first instead of what we have right now, which is America last. Nan Hayworth, board member of the Independent Women's Forum and former New York Congresswoman, and as I now have learned, a physician as well. Thank you so much for joining me.
Thank you, Rob. Thank you for your service and thank you for your voice.
Absolutely. Coming up next, we're going to lighten it up a little bit. I want to share with you a viral video that literally made my jaw drop when I saw it. See what it is after the break. All right, everybody, usually at this time we lighten the mood a little bit, but I've got something to show you that is not light. In fact, it's intense, but it's important. Check this out.
When you talk about critical race theory, which is pretty much gonna be teaching kids how to hate each other, how to dislike each other, it's pretty much what it's gonna all come down to. You gonna deliberately teach kids, this white kid right here got it better than you because he white? You gonna purposely tell a white kid, oh, the black people are all down and suppressed. How do I have two medical degrees if I'm sitting here oppressed? How do I get, first of all, right, time up. We've only got 5 minutes now. 5 minutes. Two medical degrees. No mom, no dad in the house. Worked my way through college. Sat there and hustled my butt off to get through college. You gonna tell me somebody that looked like all y'all white folks kept me from doing that? Are you serious?
Amen. I mean, I want to throw up the praise hands to that one. No, that's amazing. And remember when I told you earlier in the show about that coalition of people that is rising up against the crap that is critical race theory? That is one of what I'm sure are millions. And look, we need more like him. But thank you all so much for joining me on this journey. Guest hosting, I'm Wright with Jesse Kelly. I am Rob Smith. If you want more from me, find me on Twitter, Facebook, and Instagram at Rob Smith Online, and download and subscribe to my podcast, Rob Smith is Problematic, on Apple Podcasts, iHeart Podcasts, or anywhere you get your podcasts. Until next time.
Hey, Clay, if there was a summer camp for critical thinking, we'd be the chief counselors.
Those jellyheads in June would be intellectual warriors by August.
Be a lot of fun, too. Some Bill and Ted's Excellent Adventure references thrown in.
This podcast's like a daily dose of that, minus the campfires, archery, and pranking the girls.
The bona fide boot camp for critical thinking. You can get in on it for free at the iHeartRadio app or wherever you get your podcasts. Just search our names, Clay and Buck, listen and subscribe.
In the fall of 1986, Ronald Reagan found himself at the center of a massive scandal that looked like it might bring down his presidency. It became known as the Iran-Contra affair.
the things that happened were so bizarre and insane, I can't begin to tell you.
Please do.
To hear the whole story, listen to Fiasco, Iran-Contra on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.